Hey there, it's Lars. Thanks for checking out the Lars Larson podcasting experience, and have a fantastic day.
Lars.
Together, we can forge a new beginning for America.
The 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
Now, honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is a busy Monday for the United States Supreme Court, and President Trump is riding high after his travel restriction on six largely Muslim countries has been put back in place with just a few restrictions. And it's a big win for national security and for protecting our borders. Welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. It's a good sign for the coal production that some of the largest producers are seeing a 6% boost from last year, but U.S. strikes it big as it sees a 19% rise in the first 5 months of this year. The left-wing media only sees the problems with Trump's travel restriction, but where were they when the Obama administration did the very same thing? And by the way, think of this. You're on the way home on the train or bus, and the man next to you is clearly looking at what you're doing on your phone. Is that an invasion of privacy? I'll tell you about one man who couldn't take a hint. And please vote in my quick poll. We put up a fresh question every single night. On Friday night, we were asking you this. Is actor Johnny Depp's assassination comment a threat against the life of President Trump? 88% of you said yes, as did I. Only 12% of you said no. Our quick poll tonight. Was the Supreme Court right to reinstate President Trump's temporary travel restriction from six Muslim countries? I would say yes to that. And it was a unanimous Supreme Court decision. It's a little tough to argue with, although some of those judges below the Supreme Court, especially on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the most overturned court in America, some of those folks, well, they have a little bit of egg on their face because they decided that case based on things that Donald Trump had said during the presidential campaign. When the Supreme Court reviewed the case, even the dissenter—well, there were no dissenters, but even those left-wing judges decided not to refer back to what the candidate had said on the campaign trail. Instead, they only looked at what was in the law and what's in the Constitution, which, surprisingly, is exactly what the Supreme Court is supposed to do. You want to jump into Honestly Provocative Talk Radio for America? It's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. You can podcast this program at soundcloud.com, and you can also find it on iTunes. And while you're on the website, visit my trophy room at larslarson.com. Post a picture and a paragraph about your latest hunting or fishing adventure for a chance to win some fantastic prizes. Heck, I might get a chance to put up a picture this fall because I found out over the weekend that I actually drew a branched bull tag for the elk season this year, and that has me on top of the world. Anyway, your calls are welcome. Your emails are welcome as well. And Donald Trump says it's a clear victory after the Supreme Court unanimously reinstates his travel restriction. All this would do was revise the executive order a bit. Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. Anybody coming from those countries who does not have a credible claim of a bona fide connection to the United States, in other words, a family member or some other connection here, would simply be restricted from coming into the country. It is a 3-month to 4-month restriction. And the fact is that by the time the Supreme Court takes it up again on the first Monday in October, when the Supreme Court begins its next session, the travel restriction will be largely over. The president says, I cannot allow people into our country who want to do us harm. I want people who can love the United States and all of its citizens and who will be hardworking and productive. My number one responsibility as commander-in-chief is to keep the American people safe. Today's ruling allows me to use an important tool for protecting the nation's homeland. I'm also particularly gratified that the Supreme Court ruling was 9-0. Meanwhile, over in Nancy Pelosi's territory, there's more talk about her having to hang it up. There are Democrat representatives calling for Pelosi to step down as leader, minority leader in the House. She says that her critics are people who have opposed her since November. Pelosi responded to a montage of fellow Democrats criticizing her by saying, "This is a small item. It isn't about me. Right now, our fight is about the Affordable Care Act. I've always had a challenge in the caucus right from the start." Well, it should be interesting to see where they go, because I think a lot of people believe that Nancy Pelosi is not doing her job, and that Nancy Pelosi, as far as my read on her goes, she's not exactly all there these days. By the way, I mentioned coal production. The world's biggest coal users, China, the United States, and India, have now boosted coal mining in 2017, an abrupt departure from last year's record global decline. Mining data reviewed by the Associated Press shows that production through May is up by 121 million tons, or about 6% for the three countries compared to the same period last year. The most dramatic change in the United States, where coal mining rose 19% in the first 5 months of the year. That's according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Coal's fortunes appear to have hit a new low less than 2 weeks ago when BP reported that tonnage mined worldwide fell 6.5% last year. China and the United States accounted for almost all of the decline. I want to remind you of something. Hillary Clinton, during the fall presidential campaign, actually met with a group of miners in Virginia, West Virginia, where she told them, "We're going to put your coal companies out of work, but we'll find other jobs for you." Well, apparently that was just one of the problems she had as a presidential candidate. Can you believe that she actually thought it was a great idea to go out and tell potential voters that she was going to put them out of work? Does that make sense? Oh, and about that cell phone voyeur, the New York subway system isn't exactly known as a beacon of outstanding etiquette. In 2015, the MTA debuted a campaign urging riders to be more polite, advising them not to clip their nails, lean against the poles, or man spread. It seems, though, they might have done well to add another common courtesy tip to their signage: don't creep on other people's phones. An unidentified older gentleman wasn't just shifting his eyes to the side to see if his neighbors were playing Candy Crush. He leaned into his neighbors, hovering over their shoulders as he pointed repeatedly at their screens. The man was so intent on prying into nearby travelers' business, he was undeterred by clear signals to stop. And that's the kind of behavior that is not going to be made welcome almost anywhere. I'm glad to see people be a little bit polite. I've got to spend some time tomorrow on an airplane. If somebody starts looking over your shoulder at what you're watching or what you're reading on your pad or your computer, I think that's some of the worst behavior out there. You know, Harry's is all about a great shave at a fair price. That's why over 3 million guys just like me, and perhaps you as well, have switched over to Harry's.com. Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys, fed up with buying overpriced razors, started Harry's to fix shaving. They bought their own German factory. It came with 100 years of blade-making experience because they wanted the highest quality. All products backed by their 100% quality guarantee. They took a little less profit. They sold directly to you over the internet. Harry's offers its blades at half the price of the leading five-blade razor. But I want to tell you this. Harry's is so confident you'll love their blades, they're giving you their trial set for free. All you have to cover is the cost of shipping. The trial set includes the Truman handle, the five precision-engineered blades with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade to boot, rich lathering shave gel, a travel blade cover, and post-shave balm. That's almost a $20 value for you to try. Believe me, I went to Harry's Razors years ago, but this offer is only available for my listeners if you use my name, Lars, at Harry's.com. Do it when you check out. Get started with Harry's today and get their free trial offer, almost a $20 value, free of charge. You cover the shipping. Just a couple of bucks. To get their free trial set, including a handle, blade, shave gel, and post-shave balm, go to Harry's.com right now and enter Lars at checkout. That's Harry's.com. Lars, don't wait. Get started with Harry's today. Coming up, your phone calls, your emails, the issues of the day, and we'll talk about Donald Trump's travel ban on the Lars Larson Show.
Warning, right-winger coming through. on the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It is a pleasure to be with you on a Monday night. We'll be broadcasting live from Washington, D.C. on Wednesday and Thursday, and then join our friends in Charlottesville, Virginia on Friday for First Amendment Friday. Tonight, it's a pleasure to welcome to the program Jaleel Dawood, who is the author of The Refugee and founder of World Refugee Care. Mr. Dawood, it's a good thing to welcome you to the program. Thanks for taking the time tonight.
Thank you for having me. God bless you.
God bless you as well. What's your reaction to the Supreme Court's unanimous decision to put the Trump travel restriction on those six countries back in place?
I think it's justified, and it's pretty good. And this decision is based on the previous administration that pointed out seven nations that danger can come out of it. So it is a good thing for America. It is a protection for America, and I'm glad the Supreme Court confirmed that. We, as a church, we need to do our job toward the refugees and aliens among us, to love them, to serve them, to love the enemy. But the government job is to protect America, and that's the right decision.
Why do you think that left-wing groups in this country did not understand the nature of this and the purpose of this?
I think there is a movement of, as far as my concern, a lot of universalism movement going on, which is no borders, no allegiance. And they also, I think there's a lot of thinking toward the president that he's been discriminatory. And that's why I feel like they have taken this path that is not right for America, and it will cause trouble down the road.
I mean, even tonight, I'm seeing that one of the lead stories on the Associated Press is about a man, a member of a Muslim mosque in Hawaii, who's worried about whether or not his mother will be able to come visit him for the religious holiday of Eid. And it seems very clear from the Supreme Court's decision that one of the restrictions that was left in place is that people who have concrete ties to somebody here in the United States will see their travel documents approved. So with that, the mainstream media is still pushing out stories about whether or not people who will be able to come, when in fact it seems very clear they will be able to come if they have a tie here.
Yes, sir. I think if anybody who already have a family here, they will be connected with them. But this is for unknown, people coming here and need to be blocked for the time being. And, you know, America need to look at whoever is discriminatory against Christians in their nations or persecute Christians in their nations. We should not allow those people to come in here, because those people will come here and think about us the same way. So, you know, you have those nations, if there is any Christian among them, they will harass, kill, chop their heads off, you know. And like in Iraq, a million Christians fled in Iraq since 2003. And since 2014, about 300,000 due to ISIS. So the victim, the real victim in this whole thing is the Christian minorities in these nations, and not so much the Muslims. The Muslims, if it was a religion-only ideology, I'm all for it. But it's a system that promotes government, promotes social, and promotes religion. So it wanna control politically, socially, and religiously. So it's not your average religion like Hinduism and Buddhism. And to say we want to do freedom of religion, it's a noble thing, but you got to have to face and know what you're dealing with. And we're dealing about a religion that is not your norm.
Jaleel, it's a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks so very much for the work you do at World Refugee Care. And I would urge people to pick up a copy of your book, The Refugee. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. God bless you.
God bless you as well. Let's go to your calls now at 866-439-5277. Doug's on the line. Doug, you heard me talking about the big jump in coal production, not just here in America, but in other countries as well. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's a good thing overall. And as a liberal listening to your show,
I couldn't believe it when I heard Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama talking against what is essentially a really viable means of production, a way for people, you know, their jobs. It creates energy. It serves a need that's already there. And when they started talking about how they're going to shut down the coal industry in the United States, my eyes rolled up in the back of my head, and I said, you know, there are lots of, you know, Hillary was vulnerable in lots of places, but for me in particular, this was the opening for Donald Trump to come in and say, look, you know, I'm the one who's going to protect your jobs. And that's exactly what he did. And he played that exactly the way he was supposed to play it. And it just shocked me from the fact that not only would she say that, but the fact that she actually believed that. Well, I mean, we were 15, or this is longer than that, when the Iron Lady, Margaret Thatcher, when she closed down their coal mines, I think she rightfully got raked over the coal, so to speak, for doing that when they were still a viable means of production. And here the same thing when it's the left, and suddenly everyone became, my side became really quiet on about the whole thing when the problems and the issues behind that were exactly the same.
See, that's the thing I don't understand, because Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama both made a lot of noise about trying to get average people ahead in this country. And yet there are two things about coal that allow average people to get ahead. You keep energy costs low. Inexpensive energy and available labor are two of the critical components to make a healthy economy. Now, if we had a better alternative than coal, that's fine. When it comes along, we'll use it. There was a time when this country was very dependent on whale oil, and there was a time when this country was very dependent on wood as a source of heat. We don't use them anymore because we've found better ways. But you don't go in and wipe out the current supply, you know, before you've figured out what you're going to jump to. And wind and solar have simply not lived up to the promises that were made for them.
I couldn't agree more. That's why it just shocked me that, you know, there's a product that works. It might not be for the long term 50 years from now, but it works now. People are working now, and we need to worry about our folks now. And I think in a sense, I understand what they were trying to say, that they, you know, we want to work towards renewables, you know, with lesser greenhouse emissions and things along those lines. But just to go into their backyard and say it flat to their face, I couldn't believe it, because it's not, like I said, not just because I thought it was a bad move politically, but the fact that they actually believe that as a policy. And that was one of the things that I just, like I said, I thought that it was just a huge mistake, not just from a tactical measure, but just from a real practical measure.
Well, you and me both, Doug, because when I saw her stand there in front of a bunch of coal miners and say, we're going to put you out of business, we're going to put you out of work, but we'll find something better for you, I thought, what must it be like to be a coal miner who goes in and does a very risky, very dirty, very dangerous job, but is paid well for it, to watch this woman who's worth a couple of $100 million, I think most of it money she didn't really earn, she earned because of her celebrity and her notoriety, and to have her saying, we'll find something better for you. I think all those coal miners knew whatever it was she found for you was not going to replace the kind of money that they made from coal jobs. Doug, thanks very much. As a liberal, it's got to be a little tough to be in an environment where the politicians don't seem to connect to the average person who has to work for a living. Coming up in a moment, a Christian baker refused to make a wedding cake for a gay couple. This case was not the one in my backyard. It's one from Colorado. That case is going to be heard in the upcoming term by the United States Supreme Court. It has profound implications for the First Amendment and for people's religious freedom. We'll be back in a moment to talk about it with Professor Jenna Ellis about whether or not the Supreme Court is likely to rule in favor of the baker or to tell him, you either bake the cake or you're out of business, as others have been told. We'll be back in a moment.
The Lars Larson Show. Home to honestly provocative talk, the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It is a pleasure to be with you on a Monday night when so many good things have happened at the United States Supreme Court. And you might be surprised by this, but I'm glad to see that the court in its next session, which begins on the second Monday in October, will take up the case of a baker, a Christian baker, who said no to the attempted order of a gay wedding cake. And he said no, and I think he has the right to do that. But in other places, bakers and florists and photographers have been punished badly for refusing to be involved in gay marriage, even though I think they have a right to do that. So I've invited Professor Jenna Ellis on. She's an assistant professor of legal studies and communication at Colorado Christian University and the author most recently of The Legal Basis for a Moral Constitution, a guide for Christians to understand America's constitutional crisis. Professor, good to have you on the program.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So what should we expect of a Supreme Court that says we will take up this case, especially since it now has the full nine members and one of them is Neil Gorsuch?
I think it's a great indication, and particularly today with the Trinity Lutheran decision, which, of course, protected and preserved freedom for the state not to be able to discriminate against churches, and with the whole outlook of where the court is going, as you said, with Neil Gorsuch now on the court, it's a great indication that the court will continue to do its job, which is to apply the law and the Constitution fairly and equally and protect and preserve the right of every individual, including bakers and florists, who want to have freedom of association and free exercise of religion.
You know, Professor, since you brought up the Trinity Lutheran case, as a layperson, a non-lawyer, a non-professor, I found that case absolutely bizarre, because I would think that a sixth grader, knowing, having read the Constitution, would understand that the government can't say, yes, you can have a state grant to cover your playground for the little kids with recycled tires, unless you're associated with a church, in which case you can't have it. I mean, isn't that garden variety crossing of the First Amendment line?
Yes, and thankfully in a 7-2 decision, which was a great majority, although it should have been unanimous if all of the justices were actually just looking at the text of the Constitution and applying it fairly, It is, and essentially they said that you can't discriminate against or treat unequally institutions just because they happen to identify religiously. If there is a state benefit that's available to everyone equally, then you can't say no and decline that just on the basis of someone being a religiously affiliated organization. So, yes, that was it's a very just textbook, very clear-cut case, and I'm glad to see that the Supreme Court made the right decision there today.
All right. Now, Professor Ellis, I want to know how you think this is going to go legally, because the case involving the baker from Colorado, I had a case similar to it in my backyard involving a couple who ran a cake shop, and they also sold wedding cakes, and wedding cakes are a unique construction where you walk in and you commission a wedding cake. You don't just, well, I mean, unless you're having a low-rent wedding, you don't just walk in and buy a sheet cake at the local grocery store. And so when you commission one of these cakes, you're asking the baker to become involved in the celebration of a particular event. And if that baker says, no, I have a moral objection to that, a religious objection to that, shouldn't that cake baker have the right under the Constitution to decline to be involved in the celebration, which is a, you know, it's a First Amendment issue, it's a free speech issue? Should he or she have the right to say, I choose not to be involved in that, but feel free to buy a cake from someone else?
He absolutely should, and that's a great summary of what's going on here. And we have to remember, for the people who say, oh, wait, discrimination against, you know, the same-sex marriages. What is the Constitution and what was it designed to do? What it's designed to do is protect your and my freedom of association, free exercise of religion, and freedom of speech. Those liberties must be protected and preserved against government coerced participation. And that's really the essential question here, is can a government coerce me or you as a business owner to participate in a ceremony that fundamentally goes against our religious beliefs? And the answer to that absolutely must be no, because we have a constitution that is designed to allow differences in beliefs and differences in participation according to those beliefs. And so this isn't really a discrimination against these two same-sex men and that couple on the basis of their sexual orientation. What's really going on is that the cake baker is saying, I am declining to participate in your ceremony, not because of who they are and what their selection and identification is as LGBT, you know, whatever. It's that the baker is refusing to participate in the ceremony, which, by the way, is also inherently religious. So there should be the same coverage here as there would be, for example, a Jew declining to participate in an Easter Sunday service or a Muslim refusing to decline participation in a Christian event. Those types of things are the hallmarks of how we as Americans can agree to disagree and refuse to participate in other people's free exercise of religion.
I mean, Professor, I'd even go so far as to say that if my wife and I said we want to cater an event, we don't do that very often, but if we did, if I happened to know somebody who had a catering company who was Muslim, and I said, well, we want you to cater the event, but we want you to serve beer and wine and whiskey at the event, and the Muslim caterer said, well, you know, my religion says I'm not supposed to handle alcohol, you know, not just not drink it, but I'm not supposed to be involved in it. I would say, okay, I understand. I'll find somebody else. And I would respect his rights. I mean, I've often joked that since I go hunting from time to time, and I have friends in Northern California who've invited me to come down and go pig hunting, I wouldn't walk in with a fresh killed feral pig and ask a Muslim butcher to cut it up, because I know that he would have a religious objection to involvement with pork. Okay, I respect that. But by the same token, I don't want people to harass Christian bakers for saying they don't want to be involved in gay marriage.
Exactly. And that's what's really going on here, is that the left agenda is trying to harass Christians in this particular forum, because I would be really surprised if anyone on the left would want to force a Muslim or a Jewish baker or someone who's a caterer in that specific instance that you brought up, if they would have the same type of, no, you absolutely have to. And so in Colorado, where this initially arose, was as a public accommodation. But within the context of the law, a public accommodation is something generally that goes to something like housing, basic food and basic necessity. A wedding cake, with all due respect to the bridezillas out there, is not a fundamental necessity. That's something that you can actually go get from a different shop owner or someone if they decline to participate and use their artistic creation to participate in that particular type of ceremony. So this is something that should be very clear-cut.
And, Professor, I hope they bring up the free expression part of this, because, again, asking for a cake to be made is not simply walking into a shop and saying, I'm going to buy one of your generic cakes, and I'm going to take it home and decorate it for a gay wedding. In that case, I would expect the baker would say, I'll sell you a generic cake. What you do with it is up to you. But you're asking that cake baker.
And this baker did.
Yeah, but you don't say to him, I would like you to decorate it for a particular event that you have a fundamental religious objection to. Professor, it is a pleasure to have you on the program. Keep up the good work, and we can hope for the best this coming fall. Maybe we'll have a court with Anthony Kennedy, retired, and a brand new justice. And who knows, maybe even Ginsburg will hang it up, and we can have a whole new court, and we can get a lot more 7-2, 8-1, and 9-0 decisions.
Wouldn't that be fantastic? And hopefully Trump will have those selections. And that would just be a great thing to protect and preserve everyone's fundamental liberties, not just the Christians, but every single American. And that's really what constitutional conservatism is about, is protecting everyone's free exercise of religion.
Absolutely right. Professor Jenna Ellis, who is an assistant professor at Colorado Christian University and the author of The Legal Basis for a Moral Constitution. Coming up, would you like to see air traffic control in America taken to the private sector and taken out of the incompetent hands of government? We'll talk about it with Pete Sepp from the National Taxpayers Union next. Welcome back to Lars Larson Show. Pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. We'll get to those in just a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. I might have mentioned to you, we're going to be doing a couple of days of live broadcasts from Capitol Hill this week in Washington, D.C., and then from Charlottesville, Virginia. And to get there, of course, I can't drive there. I'd love to drive across the country, but it's too time-consuming, in this case, when it's for work. So I've got to get it on an airplane. And airplanes are very much at the beck and call of the air traffic control folks, who I think do an acceptable job. But could that job be done differently if air traffic control had some major changes? and maybe even some privatization. I've invited Pete Sepp on with the National Taxpayers Union, the president of that group. Pete, it's good to have you back on the program. Thanks for taking the time.
Always great to be here.
So what is the best way to reform air traffic control in America? And could we get all the way to privatization the way I think Canada and other countries have done?
We can certainly get to that point in time, and I think it's very important that we do. When you take a look at FAA's record right now, it's very good at regulating overall air safety, but providing air traffic control service has been a major problem. FAA is supposed to have been upgrading to the so-called next-gen system. That would replace a lot of these ground radars and use satellite navigation to move air traffic around more efficiently. You would get to your destination faster. You would burn less fuel. People would probably notice some major improvements in air service. But unfortunately, FAA's schedule and cost overruns have been a real problem. The fact is, if you take a look at the six big next-gen programs under air traffic control that the government is supposed to be running, the costs have more than doubled in the space of 4 years, and implementation times for some of these segments have slipped by 6 years. That's just not acceptable. We have better models. We can look around the world, and we can move to a non-governmental organization that can provide the service while the FAA keeps regulating the safety.
Now, Pete, I suspect when I see a government agency, and I think of the post office, I think of Amtrak and other agencies that lag behind the private sector, and they do it because of sort of the nature of government, that government is never as efficient as the private sector is. It's not just a lack of money, because I'm sure the FAA says, well, if you gave us all the money, we could get it done. But as I understand their schedule for implementing NextGen, they say that by the time the FAA, and correct me if I'm wrong, by the time the FAA gets all the segments of this improvement done, they will have an outmoded system in place. They're taking so long to, it would be like me going to the next generation of computer, but only getting there after the computer, computer technology has advanced so much that the computer on my desk is now outmoded because it took me so long to adopt the next generation.
Yeah, this has been going on for a couple of decades now, and we absolutely need to have a non-governmental organization funded by users, accountable to users, and here I mean not only airlines, but their customers, even the labor organizations, are all going to get together and run this organization like a board of directors would. And what's going to happen that's particularly attractive to taxpayers is the costs are finally going to stabilize. Right now, on a typical airline ticket, you face a tax burden of about 21% in fees, taxes, charges, surcharges. Those charges need to fall, and they would under a non-governmental air traffic control organization. The fees and taxes that this new organization would charge would replace all the fees and taxes that the government is charging, and it would be a much smoother operation, and over time, it would be a less costly operation.
So they can't fall back on the argument that they don't have the money, because if $1.05 of the airline ticket I'm going to fly tomorrow is going to fees and taxes, they should have more than enough money to be able to bring their systems up to modernization. What's holding them up?
Plain old government bureaucracy, as you say. I think that the programs and the management reforms made at FAA to try and make the agency more efficient just haven't been paying off in the way that people had hoped. In fact, the Transportation Department's Inspector General just testified to that in May. They said, despite being given wide latitude 2 decades ago from Congress to update the air traffic control system, the FAA still hasn't achieved, quote, the large-scale efficiencies, productivity enhancements, and cost savings it was supposed to. We've got to chart a different course.
I just have a tough time wrapping my head around this, Pete, because, I mean, ordinarily, those of us who work in any industry that uses technology, we're usually pretty excited about getting a new piece of gear, especially when it replaces an old piece of gear that's outmoded. You would think that these federal bureaucrats who run the system would be excited about saying, yeah, if we could get rid of that old computer system that causes so many problems or has hiccups from time to time or doesn't do the job we want it to do with a new piece of gear that would do that, you'd think they'd be hurrying to embrace that kind of technology. Why are they not?
They're just not good enough at managing change. And again, not knocking the FAA's employees who do a pretty good job at safety regulation, but governments just aren't good at implementing technology. Private organizations, nonprofit organizations that have a user accountable model, they can do that more quickly. You take a look at Canada, the UK, New Zealand, about 50 other countries that have gone to this reformed model that we're hoping will make it through Congress this year, and they have all experienced faster implementation of technologies, quicker air service, and again, costs tend to stabilize and over time actually get cheaper. That's what's happened in Canada. That's a very important thing for taxpaying travelers.
I mean, I don't want to overstate this problem, but my understanding is that essentially America is the only modern Western industrialized nation that has not gone to this new system, while all these other countries have. And some of them are not nearly as affluent as the United States is.
That's right. And we are talking about a system currently in the United States that still relies on technologies like ground-based radars and little slips of paper to track aircraft. I was actually at a news conference unveiling this air traffic control reform plan, and the chairman of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee actually brought along some of these little blue slips of paper that air traffic control staff still use to try and make sure that aircraft are being guided safely through the sky. There are many, many better ways than that.
Pete, it's a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for the work you do at the National Taxpayers Union, and we always appreciate your time.
Absolutely, sir, and look for that bill this week. It's going to be marked up in the House.
Well, let's see if we can get it to the president's desk. Back in just a moment. Glad to get your phone calls and emails at 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com.